Welcome to Judaism Demystified, a podcast for the perplexed. We are joined by Reb David Gutman. Reb David Gutman is somebody who deserves the title of Chacham, but in his humility requested that we do not call him that, but I refuse to call him Mr. David Gutman, so I'm settling for Reb. Anyway, he is a lifelong businessman who comes from a Hasidic background, but left that path behind many years ago. He attended the Slabodka Yeshiva in Bnei Brak in the early 60s and then spent time at Beit Midrash Elyon in Muncie. From a young age, Reb David has been interested in rational religion, and he found himself particularly drawn to the approach of Rambam. Since discovering Rambam, he has dedicated himself to studying the scholar's writings on both Halakha and Machshava. Reb David is also an editor of the Flatbush Journal of Jewish Law and Thought, and he has published several articles on Rambam's theology in that publication. His blog, yediyah.blogspot.com, otherwise known as Believing is Knowing, was very popular in the Jewish blogosphere when it was active. Without further ado, Reb David Gutman. Thank you for joining the Judaism Demystified podcast. We've been fans of yours since the days of the Believing is Knowing blog. For those of you listening, you should definitely check those out in the archives. It's no longer active, but there's a lot to gain from there. So before we get started, maybe Bensi, you want to introduce his topic?
Of course. So the topic that we would love you to present us is the topic of Ta'amei HaMitzvot, the reason for the mitzvot. I remember close to about 7-8 years ago, when I was introduced and sort of getting my feet wet in the Maimonidean thinking, one of the hardest things for me to understand, one of the most, and I say understand, but it's also to adjust my mind frame regarding, was Ta'amei HaMitzvot. Because Ta'amei HaMitzvot, commandments in general, is always perceived to be very mystical in nature. That is how we've been taught from the very beginning. And it's a difficult subject to expound upon, to explain, and that's why we are super excited to have you present to us your understanding of the Maimonidean understanding of the mitzvot.
Okay. Before I begin, I just want to make a statement. In Parsha, we're going to read next week, in Parshat Bo, the Pasuk says, in the middle of this day, the Jewish armies left Egypt. Reb Simcha Wasserman, who was, I knew very well, used to say, notice the plural, Tzivot Hashem, the armies of God. And it says an army is composed of Air Force, Navy, Marines, infantry, all different components. And that's how the Jewish people are. We are different pieces. We are not all homogeneous. And we have different ways of thinking, different way of understanding, but we all come together on one thing, which is the Torah and the Mitzvot and and Hashem. And what I want to say that is I'm not negating anybody else, although sometimes I will say some things that I'm critical of an approach or something like that. It does not mean that I'm negating it. It works for some people, it doesn't work for others. So that's what the Torah is about. First, I would like to present the problem. Orthodox people, if you ask them why they do mitzvot, they will tell you a very simple answer, because God told us to. And that's true, that's correct. But it does not really cover everything that the Torah, the mitzvot, were meant to do. It is a commandment, but it has more to it than that. The problem with it also is that in our thinking is you have to know why you're doing things. It's not something that you just do because I was told. You also have to know why you're doing it. It has something that has to mean to you.
Something to internalize.
You have to internalize it. You have to understand what it's trying to do. In general, the Rosh Yeshiva and the Rabbanim today, they kind of discourage you from going into the whys. They are more interested in the how. How do you do a mitzvah? What do you do, the details, and so on and so forth. But it still does not, they won't let you think about the whys, because I don't think they know themselves. I don't think they really are interested in the subject, and they don't really care too much about it. I'm talking generalizing, but it's in general like this in the yeshivot and places like that. They will be more busy with the how, why, when, how much is the shiur, and how much is that, and so on.
That's I was in yeshiva for quite a while. The understanding is that the reasoning is beyond our understanding, and that's why they don't make much of the why.
Yeah, well, that's kind of difficult. It's kind of difficult to accept, right? And I never could understand that, and never could accept that. And there's more to it than that. They encourage you to do mitzvot because the commandment. So what happens if you don't? Right? You're going to get punished. If you're going to do it, you're going to be rewarded. And it becomes almost childish, because basically people think, if I want to get something good to happen to me, I will do a mitzvot. And the mitzvot have nothing to do with what I'm doing. It could be totally different, two different things. I want to go into a business deal, and I want to be successful. And, you know, I'm screwing another guy, and I'm not 100% kosher. Well, let me go and give tzedakah, or let me go to kever of whoever, and everything will be great. It'll work. And if it doesn't, well, too bad. It didn't work out. I didn't do it good enough. I didn't do it properly enough. So basically what happens is there's no personal responsibility. It's not something that I did and therefore it didn't work out. It's not something that I created, that I caused, but it's something that just happened out of the blue. Not long ago, I was reading this Faradi rabbi in Israel who said that the Meron disaster last year was caused because the person responsible for that at that time was Ohana, who is a gay person.
Oh, God.
So what is the connection? What is the connection? Anyway, so it's really a problem when you start letting this thing go on. The other thing that it does, it becomes magical thinking. You know, if I'm sick, I'm not going to the doctor. I'm going to go to the Rebbe, or to the Mekubal, and he's going to tell me what I should do. And he's going to tell you, well, you check your mezuzot and you'll be healthy. Again, there's no connection. There's no responsibility. There's no action.
And the problem is when these things actually don't work, because it's the law of averages. They work sometimes. They don't work sometimes because people do get better and people don't, right? And they are going simultaneously to the doctor when they're going to the rabbi. So what happens is when these things, like the segula don't work, it's never the issue with the segula itself. Okay. It's always, no, the person didn't have the proper kavanah. Mm-hmm. This, you know, it's like they always have an out.
Yeah. Unfalsifiable.
Yeah.
I mean, I can go through a ton of these examples. I mean, there's a woman I knew who had a very bad, fatal lung disease. And she went to one of those charlatans in Israel, famous charlatan. I won't mention his name. And he told her to drink juices and give him money. And she'll be healed. She died. And she was a poor woman, and she owed a ton of money. She kept on borrowing to pay for this charlatan.
God.
Okay, this whole approach is dangerous. I mean, I understand the munah pshuta, I understand the whole idea, but it becomes totally hopeless. It becomes a situation where it's almost you're ashamed to be a Jew. You know, you talk to somebody outside and they say, well, he's a bunch of superstitious, the whole religion is a superstition. And it's, And the Torah tells us, Am Chacham V'Navona Ago HaGadol Hazeh. It's a smart nation that we are. How smart are we? So that's the basic problem.
You know, I had my own family experience. I'm not going to mention names, but we lost, you know, relatives in Israel also who, you know, passed away from cancer, and they went to the Kabbalist. The family gives them money. And again, there's always an excuse for them. It's always like, well, you probably didn't do it right, or, you know, and the issue is that people don't realize how rampant this is. It's not just going to Mekubalim and Rebbes. It's also these promises of, like, if you say this certain prayer for 40 days, this is going to happen to you. And if you go pray by this grave, you know, it's going to be a segula for this. And it's just never ending. Everywhere you turn, like, we see it all the time when people, you know, get sick in our community. I've had someone recently, and then they say, go look at the mezuzot, and go, you know, it's really ridiculous. And it's taking over, you know, it's become such a big part of our culture.
So it's really a problem. And the problem is also, you have the simple Jew who kind of lives with it and accepts it. But then you have the more discerning person who really starts wondering, why am I doing all this? This is nonsense. And they leave the fold. Not only did they leave the fold, but they joined the Reform, they joined the Conservative, because for them, all this doesn't matter. It doesn't work that way.
A person who doesn't gravitate towards superstition, it's relegated the mitzvot to absolute nonsense.
That is correct.
There's no alternative in understanding what these commandments might be doing.
Because also they're taking one obvious one that we keep bringing up is the mezuzah, but that we bring it up because people can relate to it. People are taking the mitzvah, they're stripping it of its meaning, and they're applying a new meaning to it, which is a protective amulet. And by doing that, you're actually turning the mezuzah into like avodah zarah in a way, because you're turning it to
Rambam in Ilchot mezuzah. In fact, talks about the people who wrote the shemot on the inside of the mezuzah, because it's a protection and so on and so forth. He says that not only does he defile the name of God because he makes a mitzvah into something that's physical, for physical support, but he's not mekayim the mitzvah. The mezuzah is pasul on top of it. So in general, mitzvot are not there for physical good. It's the mitzvot are there for our spiritual good. That's what they're meant for. And we'll get to it in a few minutes, and we'll try to explain it to you from the bottom up. So this is the major problem that you have with this approach. And there's also a very philosophical problem with it, because this whole thinking of God getting involved every minute and every second and everything that's going on, because that's what it is, really. God watches me, and after I did X, Y, Z, he's going to punish me. So creates a problem, a philosophical problem. God is perfect. He created a perfect world. And he has to now come in and fix every second. He has to come in and fix something.
Yep.
He has to get involved. Well, he's not a great mechanic. Would you buy a car from a mechanic that gives you a car that you have to, every 10 minutes, you have to stop and adjust the button? You would not. It's stupid. The mechanic that puts together a car that you never have to touch is great. That's what we want. So we're basically insulting God by keep on putting onus on him to get involved in every step of the way. So this whole thinking kind of doesn't fit for an intelligent person. It's good for a kid, but it doesn't work for an intelligent person.
It's like, it's also the idea that you hear this almost like half of the Dvar Torahs I hear these days, like God controls every leaf that falls, you know, and everything is from Hashem, even the...
Well, it's Chazal. Chazal say, I mean, that it is. So the Rambam says it's an opinion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's where this comes from. And I think people mean well, you know, but they're overcome with all of these, like, it's kind of like they're
comfort.
It's comfort, but also they're... when they read things like about Ayin Hara, you know, 99% of people in the Gemara, it says that 99% of people who die or they died from Ayin Hara. But at the same time, it also says it only affects you if you believe in it. So like,
nonsense, you know. So it just doesn't work. I mean, we're dealing with intelligent people, and yes, if you want to close your mind off and you want to say, okay, this is what it is for yourself, you know, I can't tell you anything, but I cannot believe that this would go for the population. So, I started up in that same place. I mean, I was brought up in a Hasidic home, so I started up from that point of view, and I never accepted it, and I always started thinking about it, and I went through quite a bit of changes and growth and thinking and development, and eventually I think I found my place where I can understand it. So I'd like to share it a little bit and give some ideas about it. Rav Kook, in one of his letters, there was a historian in Warsaw before the war, Zev Yavitz. He wrote a 14-volume Jewish history. And he was a frum man. He was a Mizrahi Jew and friend of Rav Kook. And he did not like the rationalist approach of the Rambam. He felt that it took away something from Judaism. So he was critical in his book about him. Rav Kook read it and was incensed and wrote him a long letter attacking him. How dare you talk badly about Rabbeinu Moshe? How dare you talk like that? If not for him, Judaism would not exist today. He said it couldn't have survived the modern era. And I think that is a very important point. We are living in a modern era. We're living in a world where science has been way more advanced than it was in the time of the Rambam and the Ramban and the Rishonim. And things have been changing a lot. We understand a lot of new things that we never understood. And you cannot continue with that old process without opening your mind. And thank God we had Rambam, who already at that time realized that for Judaism to survive, it has to be able to be understood by the intelligentsia, by the intelligent people. It cannot be just left over for the dummies. The Rambam was born, let me see, I wrote it down here. He was born in 1150 or something, in the 1150s. He died in 1203, I think. So he lived in Andalusia. He came from a long family of Gaonim, of Dayanim. And he was brilliant. There's nothing else you can say about it. There's a unique, brilliant man who started up in Spain under the when the North African Arabs conquered it, and then he had to run away. He moved up to North Africa, spent some time in the North Africa, and from there took a trip to Israel on his way to Egypt. He was about 30 years old when he arrived in Israel, and by that time he had finished writing the Pirush HaMishnah, which is a fantastic little work on the Mishnah, on the Shishel Sitre Mishnah. And then after that, he spent about 10 years writing the Mishnah Torah, which is the most major halachic source for everybody. This is a source that we still spend our times. And as an introduction to the Mishnah Torah, he wrote the Sefer HaMitzvot, which is a listing of all the Taryag Mitzvot and how they are, what they are exactly. Also fantastic Sefer of tremendous genius in there. And then later on, he wrote the Moreh Nevuchim, which is the Guide for the Perplexed, which basically laid out his thinking about Judaism. And he says it's not for everybody. He says clearly he didn't write it for everybody. And he wrote it in a very obscure way. So a lot of people can interpret a lot of things. Yeah. But and it has been done and has been worked, but it's been the book that's used usually in Jewish thought And it's really a fantastic work. Anyway, so Rambam presents a way of looking at Judaism, which I'm going to try to tell you. And like I said, a lot of people interpret him differently. And each one of us has their own little reading. But I will try to present to you something that makes sense. In one of the earlier podcasts, Professor Siskin was talking about the second parak in Moreh Nevuchim, part 1-2. And I loved it. I thought it was a great, great presentation, especially the way he explains away the whole idea there. But one of the things that in that chapter is the Rambam differentiates between Tov and Ra and Emet and Sheker. Tov and Ra is good and bad, and Emet and Sheker is true and false. And they are not the same. Most people would not even think of it, but it's not the same. True and false is subjective. I mean, it's objective. True and false is an objective thing. For example, if I say ice is cold, fire is hot, it's objective, it's a fact. That's true, right? If I say sweet food, I like sweet food and I don't like bitter food, it's subjective. Because some people like bitter food and some people like sweet food.
It's bad to you, but could be good for someone else.
Somebody else. So these are two different things. Emet v'sheker is objective. And this is, now ice and if you think about it further a little bit, ice and fire are also not exactly objective, because it's a feeling, right? So if you don't feel heat, somebody who doesn't have cannot feel heat, ice and fire are the same.
True.
Right?
There are so people.
It's relative. It's just a relative thing. I mean, if you think about it, everything in this world is relative. If I say it's night, it's not day. It's the opposite of day. So it's relative to day. If I'm blind, to me, they're all the same. And everything you can think of in this world is always relative. It's always dependent on something else. If you, whatever you say about it is dependent on something else, right? There's only one thing that we don't know, but we know cannot be relative, and that's God. Because God is the prime mover. He's the first cause. So he's not caused by anything else, and he would be a real objective truth. And Rambam, in fact, we quote him. Rambam, in fact, reads as follows. In the beginning of Mishneh Torah, he writes as follows. The foundation of all foundations and the pillar of wisdom is to know, note the word to know, that there is a primary being who brought into being all existence. By the way, primary being does not mean first. It means primary. It's hierarchical. He is the first cause. Mm. Nothing before. He was not caused by anything else. Everything else is caused by him. And Rambam explains it. All the beings of the heavens, earth, and what is between them came into existence only from the truth of his being. Right? It all came into existence because he exists. If one would imagine that he does not exist, no other being could possibly exist. If one would imagine that none of the entities aside from him exist, he alone would continue to exist because he's not caused by anything else. He just is. And the nullification of their existence would not nullify his existence, because all the other entities require him. And he, blessed be he, does not require them nor one of them. Therefore, the truth of his being does not resemble the truth of any other being. So there's only one truth that is the ultimate, ultimate truth. And that's the only one that can be, that can exist, is the first cause, is God. That's the only possibility. The understanding we get there, so if you think about this, how do we understand a being that we cannot even understand? I mean, it's something way beyond our understanding.
Right. It's the first commandment to know Hashem, but he's the unknown knower.
But and that's the truth. That's the MS. Rambam in one place is right, you don't do any mitzvot, you don't do anything just because you want to get to know the truth. But how do you get to know this truth? And we know for a fact, philosophically, if you think about it, that first cause cannot be physical, because everything physical is caused by something else. So it's something totally beyond our thinking. So how do we get to that? How do we get to this entity? How do we get to know this truth? You want to know this truth, but how do you get to it? And also, question is also going to be, what triggers you to want to know that truth? Why would anybody be interested in knowing it? So the only way that you really understand this thing is if you're interested and you look around at yourself and you see the world around you, the environment, your existence, and you start looking at it, analyzing it, and you'll study the physics and you study the sciences, and you start seeing the beauty of this system, the beauty of this world, right? You all of a sudden want to get to know this entity that created this whole thing. You want to understand it. You want to get to it. And that is the impetus to get to know God. That is how you get the impetus to want to know. Einstein was very interested in God. He saw this system that he understood, right? So to him, this was very interesting. He wasn't interested in Jewish God, but he was interested in that entity that created all this, that the wisdom, the knowledge, and the truth that's behind it. So really, this is what creates a person's interest. So to be able to look at a truth, you have to first understand the world, see the world around you, and even then, you still won't know God. All you will know is the world that he created. And you are going to try now to extrapolate from that what kind of entity that is, what kind of thinking that entity has. And you know you're never going to get the essence, but you're going to try to understand what does he want? How does he function?
You wanted to say something?
I'm good with it.
You good with it?
Yeah, totally good. Okay. I was just going to mention that what you were saying, I think also Mishnah Torah, the Rambam says that how you come to love and fear God is by studying creation.
Yeah, we got to it in a minute.
Right, okay. That's why I
okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to develop the process. But then there's another thing that happens over here. You have to be able to think abstractly. You have to be able to think beyond our physicality. We look at the world and we see all the physical, but when we're talking about God, something that is totally unphysical, non-physical, you have to be able to transcend somehow physicality. And we are physical, and we have to be able to transcend in our minds and think a little bit more, a little higher level than physicality. I'm not talking about mysticism, but I'm talking about understanding things that are not, that I can never touch and feel and think, but I want to extrapolate. So the question is, how do we get there? How do we get a person to be able to get to that point? And this is where Judaism comes in. So first, that you're taught that there is a God, and you are taught, and then you want to get to know him. You want to get to the next step. So first thing you have to do is enable yourself to be able to think. You have to create the possibility of thinking. And how do you create that possibility is you have to analyze yourself. You have to look at man. You have to look at it at your person and see what's going to make me better, what's going to give me the ability to think. And of course, it's done for us. That's not what the Judaism does for us, right? And you have to improve yourself. Why do you need to improve yourself? Because you start thinking about intangible things, bias comes to play. Your imagination, your physicality, your experience, all come to play. And you also have biases. You have personal biases. You have appetites. You have different things that impact your thinking, and you have to work on them. So the Rambam, in his Pirush HaMishnah, has an introduction to Avot, which is called the Shmona Prakim, the 8 chapters, and he lays out over there an interesting idea. He says a human being, the human mind, is composed of 5 different parts, which are one. They're just one, but there are 5 different functions. And he enumerates them. He's talking about the appetite, the koach medameh, which is the imagination, and then the mind that runs the body, the physical body, and that calls it the nourishment, which takes care of the body. And then you have the senses. And then the fifth one is the mind, right? All these different functions work together and they impact each other. Now, a human being has one advantage over everybody else. It's the mind, it's the thinking. All animals have imagination, because imagination is really memory. Imagination is where you pick up traces of experiences that stay in your mind and you develop opinions about them. And that's where the imagination comes to play. But appetites, they all have. Everybody has instincts. Everything is the same except the mind. Rambam explains the pasuk, "B'tzelem Elohim asa et Adam," the God made man into the image of God. Everybody says that is the image of God. He says Tzelem is not an image. Toar, Tmuna, that would be an image. Tzelem is the essence. The essence of man is a thinking. Just, he can think abstractly, just like God can think abstractly. That's the Tzelem Elohim. He has the ability to think of an abstract way. He's not God, of course not. He doesn't think like God, but he has this ability which makes him similar to God in that sense. I'm not going to get into the philosophical Platonic background of this whole thing, you know, with the tzura and all that. But just the idea is that what makes a man is his ability to think. And what does that mean? That means to say that he can subjugate all his other urges to his rational thinking. He can control them with his rational thinking. He can control his appetites. He can control his imagination. Right? The imagination comes in, but the mind can say, doesn't make sense. He can control everything that he does. So if he does that, then he's a man. That creates a man. So how do you get to that is a training process. You have to train yourself, your body, to listen to your mind and to follow in discipline. So now you have the mitzvot and the Torah, which help you get to that point. Right. So now let's see what happens. I just wanted to quote something over here, which is from the Rambam, which is very important. So we said earlier that there's a whole process of preparation. The process of preparation first is to see the world around you. So you have to study. First thing that you have to do is study. Study physics, study sciences. I'm not saying that you have to become a physicist, but you have to know what's going on in the world. You have to understand that the sun does not go around the earth. You have to understand that how this universe works. And when you look at that universe, you start getting this urge, this need to get to know God. The Rambam reads like this, what you were talking about before. What is the path to attain love and fear of him? Love and fear means to get to know God. When a person contemplates his wondrous and great deeds and creations and appreciates his infinite wisdom that surpasses all comparison, he will immediately love, praise, glorify him, yearning with tremendous desire to know God's name. And that's the truth. This is what happens. If you look around at the universe and you see how great it is, right, you want to know who did this. How does this happen? How did it come into being?
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
Why do we see this phenomenon of scientists who deny God? Why doesn't it work for them?
Because it doesn't work for them because they... Let me give you an answer. What's his name? The physicist that had ALS. What was his name?
You're talking about
what's his name? Dawkins?
No, Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. Right. Stephen Hawking. His website years ago had the whole thing about the Big Bang. Right. And at the end he says, you know, and what happened before the Big Bang? And he says, then I have no answer. He said, it could be a singularity, or it could be, like the religious say, God. He took it off at the end of his life, and he just said it's a singularity. But he himself was going back and forth on this whole idea. Is there a God? Is there something that created or not? And they really don't know the answer. They don't know the answer. We know the answer because
the problem they really have is not God as the Rambam would explain God. It's correct. More about the Judeo-Christian image of what God ought to be or what God
maybe. I don't know if they've gotten that far away, but
I think their issue is more with this like a bearded man in the sky kind of God.
That's not what my question is.
Not necessarily. They're not that.
It's not about having an issue. It's why I see. So what you're trying to say is that regardless of their conclusion, them being scientists naturally lead them to question the origins.
Of course. Yes. Of course. They all do that.
Yeah.
They all do that.
Whether they deny or not, that's different than the fact that many people can go through the whole lives and don't even think about whether there's a God or not. They just live. But a scientist is going to encounter that one way or another.
Question about it.
That's what he's being metasekin in a way, you know.
So question about it.
I don't know. I don't know if my question now might take you a little bit off, you know, your point. But I'm actually curious. I've heard this answer before from our rabbi, Rabbi Maruf, but I would like to hear your perspective, because one of the Rambam's, like you just mentioned, his explanations about trying to know God is to understand his effects. And you can understand, let's say, for example, God's mercy through looking at observing nature, or God's justice through observing nature. But intuitively, we don't necessarily see, like, for example, we see the animal kingdom and there's, you know, they're vicious towards each other. And how do we see this, you know, justice and mercy and all that through observing God's world?
That's a good question, a very good question. And it's not a simple answer. It's not something that you see at first blush. You have to be able to look, there's the micro and the macro.
Yes.
And you have to be able to look at the macro. For example, cancer, right? It's a bad thing. Where's the rachamim? Where's God's goodness? But if you look at it deeply, these mutations are what saves humanity. So in the macro, cancer is something that comes along together with the mutations.
Necessary.
It's just part of the system. So in the totality, there's rachamim over here. He wants to keep the human race alive. So he put together this biological system. That biological system has some side effects. So it's not going to be perfect for everybody, but in the macro, it's going to be okay. I'm answering a little bit an easy answer on a difficult question, but I'm trying to point out.
I think that part of the big mistake that people make, especially when they think about religious matters, is they tend to personalize every idea. They're thinking about it as, you know, why is this happening to me or to him? And everything is very individualized,
very good point,
and personalized, when the truth is, as our rabbi always mentions, that's really man-centered thinking. That's when you correct. Individualize and personalize everything, you're thinking in a man-centered way. That's when correct. In reality, in order to get closer to God, you have to have a God thinking. You have to have a God thinking mentality, which is more about the general and the
it's
whole. Correct.
It's a macro. It's the whole world.
And that's a very, very, very difficult pill for people to swallow. Yes.
Okay. Now, for example, earthquakes. Let's take earthquakes. They're good and they're bad. They're bad for the people who happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. But all in all, earthquakes are needed in the system for the world to continue existing. You know, everything has got the good and bad to it. It's not always all good and all bad. But you have to look at the macro. You can't look at every micro little thing. And yes, people, it happens. People go into it. I mean, in the Pirkei Hazirah, the Rambam discusses this at length, and he really talks about it. He really works it out. But anyway, coming back to what the Rambam says over here, you look at the world. So the Rambam says, what do you have to do according to this? Based on these concepts, listen to this. I will explain important principles regarding the deeds of the master of the world to provide a foothold for a person of understanding to develop love for God. As our sages said, regarding love, in the manner which you recognize he who spoke, and thus in this manner you will recognize he who spoke, and thus brought the world into being. To love something, you have to know it. You want to know it. If you are in love, you want to know your beloved, right? So if you love the world and you love what you're seeing, you want to know that person that created it. So you have this urge now to get to know God. So sciences is not anti-religion. Science is pro-religion. It is the cause for religion. It's one of the reasons for religion. And you need science, at least a passing knowledge of science, to be able to do this.
It's two sides of the same coin, because science is trying to explain the how and religion is trying to explain the why.
That is correct. That is correct, exactly. It's not only the why, but it also wants to explain. The religion wants to teach you how to get to know the why.
Correct.
Okay, that's what the religion does. So anyway, so we know now that you won't know God. So we're trying to get to know God through his actions, and then from there we want to go to the next level. So we have to improve ourselves, right? And we have to make sure that our mind controls our urges, controls our appetites, controls our thinking. So the Rambam explains that the reason for the mitzvot is twofold. One part of it is societal. It's more than twofold, it's threefold, but one part of it is societal. These are the laws of society, because you cannot do this speculation, just trying to think about God without having a society, and you don't have to defend yourself every minute because somebody's going to attack you. Right? So that's the first step. Then you have to self-improve, because that also helps society and helps you yourself also. It gives you an ability to think properly, right? And it's only after that you can do the ultimate thing, which is thinking about God. And the way he puts it is very interesting. The way he puts it is as follows. The general object of the law is twofold: the well-being of the soul and the well-being of the body. And then he goes on to say how the well-being of the soul is promoted by correct opinions communicated to the people according to their capacity. So first you have to tell people, this is the goal that we want to get to. We want to get to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is a God. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. There is a God. And you have to, you're going to try to find him. To make you interested in it, you start studying and you start looking around and you get interested and you want to get to know it. And then the next step is for you to improve yourself. So how do you do that? You follow the mitzvot. And the mitzvot basically start from childhood on. You take a child, you teach him the basic beliefs, and then You teach him the mitzvot, which teach him a discipline. It kind of builds up discipline from childhood on. It's not something that you have to learn. And from that step, from then on, he develops his thinking. And he gets into seeing the world, learns the sciences, learns the basic knowledge, and now he starts trying to understand what's going on, right? It's very interesting because we say this every day in Shema. In the second parasha of Shema, we say, "Vayayim shomoa tishmoa mitzvotai asher anochi mitzaveh etchem hayom le'ahava et Hashem Elokechem ulo'avdo b'chol levavchem b'chol nafshechem." Right? If then you obey the commandments that I enjoin upon you this day, loving your God, serving God with all your heart and soul. So you have the mitzvot in one pasuk, right? Love of God, which is trying to get to know him, and avdo, which is worship. So the Torah is telling us there's one way of getting to know God, and that's the tachlit of everything, is to get to know him. And how do you do that? By keeping the mitzvot. Mitzvot give you that training that you need to improve yourself. So the mitzvot is not only the commandments of God, but every mitzvah, you have to analyze it and see how does it affect me as a person.
Yeah, I think looking at it from this perspective is so healthy because it's Rambam is seeing it as there are tools for improvement. That's improving correct. Ourselves and improving the world. And unfortunately, a lot of people treat the mitzvot as kind of like some type of magical, you know, like you
exactly.
mentioned
before. That's what I was trying to get at. You get the point. That's exactly the point. The point is, it's not a magical thing. It's not a talisman, and it's not a pill. It's something that you have to work on, and you have to analyze it. You have to work on it. For example, when you have a mitzvah of lo tignov, don't steal. Yeah, you're not. It's societal, right? At first blush, it looks like societal. But why do you want to steal? What gives me the impetus to want to steal?
Greed.
Greed.
Desire.
Jealousy.
Jealousy, yeah.
So if you do the mitzvah properly and you analyze the mitzvah and how it relates to you, you're working on yourself. You're working on your personal issues, right? Every mitzvah, you have to look at it more than one prism. It's not one reason why I do the mitzvah. There's the main reason for the mitzvah, which is this has to be societal. But at the same time, it's working on me.
So how do we extend this to, let's say, shatnez?
Okay, shatnez is a good question, right? So then you have mitzvot that are chukim.
Mm-hmm. Well, so in general, how does chukim fit this system?
So you're asking a good question. The chukim fit the system because they are the ones that you do because God told you to do them, right? And the Rambam will say also that it has to do with Avodah Zarah.
Correct.
He's guessing, but it has to do with Avodah Zarah. But
you
happen
to be right, actually, because they found that the pagan priests in the ancient world, that some of them used these fabrics that were interwoven that included wool and linen, and therefore it's it's a form of Avodah Zarah that existed, and the Torah is repudiating that action. However, the Kohen Gadol, when he goes into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, on the holiest day of the year, wears this material to show that it's intrinsically not, there's nothing, there's no power in it. It's not some evil force. It's just, it's forbidden because you're not supposed to mimic.
I'll take it one step further. I once bought a Italian suit. I loved it, right? But it was shatnez, so I couldn't take it. I couldn't buy it, right? So I worked on my greed, right? On my tavot also.
I see. You're saying that even if we don't, if you don't have a revealed reason, let's call it
correct,
the participation in fulfilling the commandment automatically creates
put discipline in you.
Midot.
Yes.
It is
basically every mitzvah will go that way. So if you really want to do the mitzvot properly, that's what you need to do. And of course, we don't do that. We are just human beings, and we just go around and do a mitzvah because we are used to it, and so on and so forth. But if you have a minute time sometimes, and you think about it, maybe Shabbat, lo taseh kol melacha, right? Well, I'm going to lose a deal. I have a business deal, and I got to close it tomorrow morning. If not, I don't do it. So what do I do? I control my mitzvot, my tava, right? So every mitzvah you can really think about it and come back. And the Rambam tells you that. This, and if you look at the end of Hilchot Mi'ilah, last halacha in Hilchot Mi'ilah, exactly what he says. He says all the mitzvot you have to try to find out why you're doing them. You have to figure out why you're doing them. And if you don't know one, don't turn your back on it, because maybe next time when it comes across it, you'll find out why.
Try to find the reason. Yeah.
You have to find the reason, because if you don't find the reason, the mitzvah is just a talisman.
Yes. That's so important. And it's very difficult also, because a lot of the mitzvot that we do on a daily basis, they're like, they're routine. So naturally you stop to kind of, you know, analyze and meditate on what you're doing, and you're just kind of doing it as like a, even if you don't have you're not a magical thinker, you're still kind of taking the mitzvot for granted in a way.
Yes. Yeah, of course. But then becomes mitzvot and nashim melumada.
Correct.
It's
yeah.
The pasuk, right? Yeah. You do it because you're routine. But of course, we always do that, and we're always going to do that. But it's necessary to do it that way. Because if you don't do the mitzvah, you're never going to think about it. It's when you do it so many times, and one time you realize why you're doing it, and you think about it, then it did the job. So it's a process, a human process. We are not perfect. We would love to be perfect. We'd like to be spending a whole day just thinking about these things, but we can't. So now let's come a little bit to the next step. Let's come to the next step. What is reward and punishment? How do we understand now reward and punishment based on that? So the first thing is, in societal situations, you have to look at cause and effect. Basically, anything that we do has an effect. We cause something. There's a consequence to what we do. So if you don't behave ourselves properly and we lose our temper in a family situation, one of our kids watches it, gets traumatized, and I don't know how many generations he can kill through that. No, who knows what the consequences are. So there's a cause and effect. That's the punishment. If it's something to do with you personally, you did not improve yourself. That's your punishment. Schar mitzvah, mitzvah, schar avera, avera. I missed an opportunity to improve myself. I missed an opportunity to improve myself. When I'm going to do speculating, I won't be able to think about God properly, and I will have a bias. I will say to myself, why do I have to say that this is asur or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. I'll find a way around it. And when I think about God being non-physical, well, you're going to have a bias there. You know, and you're going to say, well, I don't have to be that perfect to be able to get there. So the process now becomes a total different thing. It's a responsibility of me, man. Whatever I do is me. And the rabbi is not going to help me. The mekubal is not going to help me. Nothing is going to help me. It's going to be what I do. And it's very empowering.
And the stakes are extremely high because if I understood correctly, according to the Rambam, you only become human when you actualize your potential, correct?
That's correct. No, you become human as on your way to the potential. You work on it. As you start working on it, you become human. Otherwise nobody would be Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek Lo'olam Haba. Does not mean
that. Yes. Okay.
I mean, that's the real understanding of Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek Lo'olam Haba, that every Jew is, when he does a mitzvah, once in his lifetime he's going to think about it, right? And maybe that moment he put himself on that path to get to know God.
Yeah, he
because Olam Haba is in fact, that's what it is. I mean, that's the getting close to God is the Olam Haba.
Uh-huh. So
the whole, everything that you do is for that process of getting to know God. And some of us do it all the time. Some of them do it less time. Some of us do it in the background. But you want to keep it in your background all the time. That's what and that's why you do the mitzvot.
The mitzvot are
because they keep on reminding you, this is what I'm doing. And when you have
conditioning you.
You guys are in business, right? Or you work, whatever, and you have a problem, and you have to make an ethical decision. Am I going to do this or not do this? This guy fooled himself. He made a mistake. Do I tell him or do I tell him? You know, so now you have an ethical problem. And in the background, you think about it. If I'm doing the right thing, I'm improving myself. If I'm improving myself, I'm doing it also because it's going to improve me so I can eventually do better when I come thinking about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it's a Jew's process, life process is completely bound with that system. That's what the mitzvot are trying to do, is to keep you constantly thinking about this process.
Does that mean, I'm just making a deduction here. So the mitzvot are tools to help condition us to constantly to know Hashem through these constant tools and reminders, and it's always conditioning us on that path. However, theoretically speaking, well, in fact, not even theoretically speaking, for a non-Jew who doesn't have mitzvot, how does that work? Because we're not assuming that Hashem doesn't want non-Jews not to know Him. I mean, how does the non-Jew fit this picture?
So Rambam has a discussion about that in a few places. One of the places in the end of Hilchot Melachim. Basically, what he argues is that a non-Jew without a mitzvot, if he keeps the Sheva mitzvot, the seven mitzvot, and he works towards getting to know God, he would have Olam Haba just like a Jew.
So
he can get there. It's much harder for him.
Fine. I understand. It's harder for him. But now here's my gray area. So a non-Jew doesn't have the commandments. It's going to be harder for him, but he can get there.
Right.
Jew has the commandments to help aid him get there. What happens about the Jew that doesn't keep mitzvot, but does think about God? There are people like that.
Or keep the Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach.
So I always said that there's two things. There's an observant Jew and a religious Jew. There are Jews that are observant and non-religious, and there are people who are religious and non-observant.
On this, if we're going with this line of thought, that would not preclude someone who doesn't keep the commandment from theoretically achieving something.
That is correct. If he is working on himself and he's doing what he has to do, yeah. I mean, there are limitations, and the Rambam puts limitations that you have to believe that Moshe Rabbeinu gave out the mitzvot and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But in a generality, on a general format, yes, definitely. You can get to it. It's harder. It's much harder because you don't have all that thing. I mean, there are Jewish thinkers, I mean, Wolfson and others, who were Gdol Israel and learning, and they were not frum. And
I think that it's important, because I think that we tend to generalize and put people in boxes, and I don't think that's the right thing.
Definitely not. I mean, you had Mark Angel.
Yes.
My angel, right?
Yes. Nice. You've been listening.
Some of them, not all of them.
So yeah, you know, we put people in boxes. We assume things. We try to play God and say this person's like that, and this person's like that, and that person's like this. That's not the way it works.
Well, you know, Lashon Hara became a religion these days. People tell you always, and they have all these details and halachot and so on and so forth. The Rambam puts it at the end of Hilchot Deot. The dinim of Lashon Hara,
yep,
on Hilchot Deot, which is Hashkafa, which is Midot. You don't want to talk Lashon Hara. Not that you shouldn't talk. You don't want to talk. You have to teach yourself not to look down on another person. There's no reason for you to talk Lashon Hara. It's not the talking that's the avera. It's the thinking that you think badly about the other person. You just actualize it by talking. So it's Judaism is an internal, it's a psychological religion where you work on yourself. It's all your how you improve yourself.
This might be a controversial question, because related to what you're saying right now, better the person who's spending his life contemplating and working on his character, who is not necessarily super observant, is better off than the guy who, you know, doesn't think about it, doesn't care about it, but you know, he passes by a mitzvah tank every day and he puts on the tefillin and he doesn't feel anything. He just does it. Or even one time in his life, there's this like cosmic, people have this approach that there's like some kind of cosmic, theurgical, you know,
when you're putting on shaking up the
Well, I don't know. The Babich has got an approach. Chabad has got an approach where if you do a mitzvah, you want to do another mitzvah. Mitzvah goreret mitzvah.
Yes.
So.
And to give them credit, I mean, I think there's a lot.
And it works. Sometimes it works. Yes. I mean, if it works, it doesn't work on everybody, but it works 1 in 10, 1 in 1,000.
The inspiration part of it.
I thought you were going to ask this the opposite way. I thought you were going to say, what happens to the person who's keeping commandments, but only keeps it?
Yes. I was actually going to get to that.
Right. It seemed like, I think.
Yeah. I kind of got distracted by my own thoughts.
Yeah. That's what I thought you were going to say. Oh, wait. Okay.
Yeah.
So really, if a person's keeping mitzvot, but really his understanding of mitzvot is completely, what's the proper word? I don't even want to say mystical, but looks at it as, you know, not really tools for improvement, but just, you know, either just doing
the talisman, put it that way. The people,
the talisman,
not a means, but an end, you know,
like means it, and then you have the person who might not be observant, but is really truly contemplating, and you know, so. It's not.
I am presenting something that talks to me, and I understand the Rambam the way I understand him. And I left out a lot of details over here that we skipped on, but there are other approaches. The Ramban and the other Rishonim had a different approach. Really? They felt that every mitzvah does something upstairs.
Correct.
Okay, and they believed in magic. That magic is real, but you're not allowed to use it. You know, so it was a different approaches, and I don't negate it, and I think what I see in today's community, and what I see what's going on here, is we're becoming more and more superstitious.
Yeah.
And less.
Becoming a pandemic.
No, it's becoming less and less that I'm doing something because I want to get better. I want to do something good. I want to improve myself. I want to get to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to get to know something, you know, and it's depressing sometimes. It's really hard to watch it.
You see it with family. I see it with family members, relatives. You know, the thing is, what I appreciate what you're saying, that we're not out to negate anything of other people, because there are going to be, like, we're not trying to change people who, let's say, are more mystically inclined, but we just want people to maybe start thinking about things from a different perspective, seeing things, you know, sometimes more rationally, because of the fact that it'll benefit them. And ultimately, we care about, listen, we're not going to stop anybody from believing what they want to believe. But we do, you know, we do believe that this is something that
needs a voice.
It needs a voice. It's very suppressed in the religious world. And a lot of people, like you said, we live in the 21st century. There's a need sort of for religion to kind of go back to the basics again.
What I would say to you is, don't try to change anybody. If he's doing his mitzvot and he's doing his thing,
right.
You know, let him believe what he believes, let him do his magic, let him walk around the table 7 times Friday night, you know, whatever they do, that's fine.
As long as
he keeps the mitzvot and he follows the halakha.
Exactly.
Sometimes people go crazy with the halakha, they become OCD on it.
Yeah.
Fine.
The motto of this podcast is it's a podcast for the perplexed. We're trying to.
But if there's somebody who does not buy into this, and he is doing things because he feels guilty, and he's doing it just because he knows it's superstition. Why I'm doing it because I my parents did it. They want me to do it, and so on and so forth. Maybe when they see something like this, when they hear something like that, it'll make them think and get interested, and then find out what's going on, and how to go about it. We were just talking to people who are looking or trying to understand something.
But I will say one thing. I want to phrase this correctly. Correct someone who's you know, the person who's Shomer Torah Mitzvot and everything, not to bother him. I agree. But I will say is that a lot of people, if they would know that there is a true derech, a true path, a rational path, they would have wanted to know that. They would have wanted to hear that. But the only thing that they've ever heard since they were little kids was the magical thinking version. So sometimes, a person might be happy with what he's doing at the time because he's not even aware that there's any other approach. Yeah. But if he were to know that there is that approach, it would interest him. And if we don't bring a voice to it, would never have known. And I'll take myself as an example. I grew up my whole life and I was not unhappy. I grew up in the yeshiva background, and I was into Hasidut and everything. And, you know, I loved it. And till today, I can say that I really loved it and everything. I didn't know that there was any other approach. But if that approach would not have been voiced, I would not have known. But when I realized there was that approach, it did interest me for various reasons. So that's another thing. It's not about trying to change someone, but I do think that more people than we realize have had, if they were to know of this approach, it would interest them and it might enrich them. That's all.
Well, let's hope what I said tonight is going to be heard by somebody and help them. But yeah, this to me, this speaks to me because it puts the onus on me.
Yes.
You know. Yes. I can identify when I did something wrong, and I understand why I did that something wrong is bad, right? And I'm really not worried about the worm in the water to put up a filter. I'm not bothered with that. That's not my that doesn't turn me on.
Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Alav Shalom, his motto, his life mission was always say that Judaism is all about radical responsibility. That was his
correct.
That's his definition of Judaism: radical responsibility.
Right.
That was his entire motto.
You know, one of the most, like, piggybacking on what you're saying, is one of the most sobering ideas. Like, I also used to study a lot of Kabbalah and Hasidut, and one of the things that really blew my mind was the Rambam's, it's kind of scary, but Rambam's view of, you know, like death being finality, that you can't actually change after death, meaning that there aren't any rungs that you can go through to perfect your soul tikkunim. After all these tikkunim and reincarnation and all these ideas. The idea that this is our one shot, and it gives us a sense of urgency to act instead of, you know, saying, you know what, I'll just fix it in my next life, you know. And that always, even when I believe
people really do go with that.
Yes.
By the way, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, one way or another, God will get me to the finish line. One way or another, instead of
That's not true, and you have to do it yourself. That everything is in your hand, and there's much more to talk about this. I mean, we can go on this forever, but there is a lot. There's a lot to be said for this type of responsible Judaism of thinking about things in a responsible way, and trying to focus in on the important. You know, and the important thing in the mitzvot is what it does to you, what it does to the person. God doesn't need my mitzvah. He has no interest at all in my tefillin. He has no interest at all in my in even my Shabbat. Shabbat is for me to get close to God. When I say vaychulu, I'm thinking about the creation. I think we are running out of time, right?
Yes. Well, we really wanted to thank you for making.
You're welcome. We went off completely out of script, but that's all right.
No, okay. It's all.
That's the way we like it.
Yeah. It all comes together. It's one point that goes into many places, and it's an extremely important point. It's a point that we hope the listeners will enjoy, will think about, will internalize, we really appreciate it. Really, really appreciate it.
Welcome. I appreciate the opportunity.
Shavua right, tov.
Shavua tov.
Shavua tov.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning into the Judaism Demystified podcast. We really appreciate all your support and your feedback. If you want to help us grow the podcast, keep spreading the word, share it with your friends, family, or whoever you think would be interested. We also opened a Patreon, so you can become a patron, contribute any small amount you'd like, which would really help us grow the show. Our Patreon is www.patreon.com/Judaism. Pretty easy to remember. Thank you again, and we hope to keep putting out great shows for you guys.